home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Kicked up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. It is now 7 minutes after 5 o'clock, and welcome into our WSBT studios in Mishawaka for another installment of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And we're also brought to you by Sport Clips. I'm Darren Pritchett. I'll be joined by Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider, for the South Bend Tribune. We've got football tomorrow. It's the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame with a record of 3-1 taking on the 2-2 Miami, Ohio Redhawks. Kickoff at Notre Dame Stadium is set for 5:17. The game is not locally on WNDU because the President's Cup is on NBC this week. So one of your options is to catch Irish football right here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Our coverage starts at 11 a.m. with the Jack Swarbrick Show. Then at noon, a replay of the Brian Kelly radio show, which was very entertaining last night. We're going to play a portion of that radio show coming up in our next segment. Then it is game day with Evan Sharpley. Live at Ivy Court Inn and Suites, where you can enjoy some delicious Fisher Tips and Chips barbecue. On the guest list from 1 to 2 tomorrow with Evan is going to be John Dampier and Frank Pomerico, captains of the 72 and 73 Fighting Irish football team. Also, Ara Parsegian's daughter, Cindy, will be on the program, as well as the president of Miami, Ohio, both heavily involved with the Neiman Pick Foundation, and also 24/7 Sports, Tom Loy, who handles recruiting for them, will be a guest of Evan on game day with Evan Sharpley tomorrow from 1 to 2, live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites, right across from the University of Notre Dame. That's when Eric and Sean and me will take over with Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat from 2 to 4, IMG pregame show at 5, or I should say at 4 o'clock, and then kickoff at 5:17. Reggie Brooks and I will have the official Notre Dame football postgame show. Sean will have postgame interviews with Notre Dame players. Busy, busy day once again tomorrow on 96.1 FM WSBT. Before we get to the football conversation, some baseball news. The Cubs, a meaningless game being played at Wrigley Field since they've already won the National League Central. The Reds right now lead the Cubs 4-2 in the bottom of the eighth inning. One game that did matter earlier today in the American League at Yankee Stadium, New York, shut out Toronto 4-0, so that forces Boston to win one more game to wrap up the American League Eastern Division title, and Boston can take care of that tonight when they host the red-hot Houston Astros. White Sox are in Cleveland. They'll play a 7-10 game at Progressive Field against the AL Central champion Cleveland Indians. That's what's happening in baseball today. In terms of the other big sporting event, as I mentioned, a rare Saturday where a Notre Dame home game will not be on WNDU in the South Bend market due to NBC's decision. This is not WNDU's decision. This is one of those things that the upper echelon of NBC had already said they were going to carry the President's Cup this weekend, so that's why Notre Dame football has moved to the NBC Sports Network. So you might want to check your local listings if you can pick up the game again. I guarantee you, you'll hear it right here on 96.1 FM WSBT. So the President's Cup is underway. Friday, four ball action today, five matches. Went off the first tee, and three are complete. The United States have picked up a couple of more victories, and they now lead 6 points to 2 over the international squad. A couple of matches still ongoing, it looks like. Actually, the Americans won 2 and halved another. And right now, the U.S. leading one match through 15 holes and all square through 16. So the U.S. in really good shape right now. In the President's Cup, as they're playing that Liberty course with the Statue of Liberty, just off to the side, a beautiful place to play some golf and some really good golf taking place up in the Northeast with the President's Cup. So that's some of the things that are happening right now in the world of sports. You know, we're going to get to our normal segment, the Advantage Game. Eric's running a little behind right now. He's not with me right now. So we're going to flip segments. So we'll get to the Advantage Game coming up in just a couple of moments. But I want to play for you something that we've talked about this week, but Brian Kelly on his radio show last night had a chance to expound on the unnecessary hit delivered by the Michigan State linebacker on Brandon Wimbush last Saturday at Spartan Stadium in the midst of an Irish 38-18 victory over the Spartans. Brandon was on the ground. The hit came in. It was helmet to the back of the head, and no doubt it was targeting. The officials on the field did not call it. Replay booth was asleep. They didn't stop the game. And what should have been a penalty and an ejection, that did not turn out to be the case. Now, the Irish, as always, got an apology from the Big Ten and the ACC over the missed call. But I thought Brian Kelly was very honest, very outspoken, and offered some really good insight on this hit and also the continuing concerns of these type of hits on Notre Dame football players the last couple of years. DeShone Kizer and Torrey Hunter also come to mind. So this is from the Brian Kelly radio show on WSBT radio last night. It's about 4 minutes of audio, but I think it really offers some really interesting analysis from the head coach of the Fighting Irish, Brian Kelly, not only on the Wimbush hit, but just this targeting situation in college football.
Well, the first thing was, obviously, I on the sideline, I was obviously not very happy. It happened right in front of me. So the line judge was right there, and I couldn't believe that he didn't call it. And I asked, during the ensuing timeout, I actually brought the referee over. And, you know, he said, well, my guy's right here. I wasn't near the play. He's got to make it. And we didn't get buzzed by the replay booth, who has to be looking at it as well. So not only did we get an apology this week from the ACC, we got an apology from the Big Ten. But we seem to get a lot of apologies. You know, we just did a quick Mike Burch and I, but we've had 7 of our players thrown out of a game since 2013 for targeting. There's been 1 thrown out of a game, and that was Joey Bosa in the yeah. Fiesta Bowl. 7-1, and of course, we know the amount of non-calls that we've gotten. So it's pretty frustrating that we seem to miss them conveniently when it's Notre Dame.
And the unfortunate thing is, and in all honesty, being an independent is a great thing, but it comes with some disadvantages. Yep. You do not belong to an organization that has its own officials. And I've heard people, Notre Dame should have their own officials. Well, let's be honest. In this world, no one's going to play you if you're bringing your own officials, or even if there aren't enough independent schools to finance it or for people to sign off on that. So you can't just say, well, you know what? We're not using ACC officials anymore.
You know, I'd buy that argument if it was a holding call, mm-hmm. right? I'd buy that argument if it was a procedure call. But when it comes to the safety of players and the amount of calls that have been missed relative to player safety, I don't buy that. I don't buy it if it's Notre Dame and you hate Notre Dame. You're in this game to protect the players. And quite frankly, you know, over the last couple of years, we've had egregious hits on our quarterback.
There's no question.
DeShone Kizer last year slides and gets speared. Torrey Hunter, we all know what happened in the Texas game. The Big 12 officials were suspended for a lack of a call there. It's getting you know, obviously tiresome to even talk about it, but it's got to get fixed. I mean, because we're at this point now where, you know, we talk about player safety, but I'm watching a game where they throw a kid out of the game at Stanford for trying to make a tackle. but yet a guy can launch himself up in the air onto a kid's helmet, and they didn't see that one. So just doesn't it doesn't fit with me that they can't figure that out and see that.
So the next question is, and I asked it poorly. I agree with you. It's egregious. There's no excuse for it. But what I guess what I'm saying is people say don't use ACC officials anymore. Don't use these officials. Notre Dame doesn't have that many options. Or do you do that? Do you just
no.
try to find another group?
No, we don't have to use ACC officials. Okay. You know, we have the ability to use any officials that we want. Certainly, you know, it's a little bit more complicated, obviously, you know, when you're...
Because you're kind of part of it, except
yeah,
for football.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you've got five games on your schedule that are ACC affiliated. But, you know, we see them all, right? SEC officials, ACC, Big Ten, you know, we get them all. So...
So what you're telling me, you've discussed all options.
We've discussed all options, and I just think that, you know, it's really strange that now that we've had two of these types of hits that are just so blatant, it just is unimaginable that they can throw somebody out of a game and stop a game for a tackle, and throw somebody out. But when somebody launches in the end zone against Torrey Hunter last year, or somebody launches against the quarterback, they don't even replay it. Now it's starting to become more than just a coincidence.
Would you like coaches to have the ability to call for a replay in that situation? I want you to look at that.
Well, I just think at some point, you know, we're going to have a challenge to...
Or do you even have to have a targeting official?
Well,
somebody
no.
Somebody who's just looking for that.
To me, what's the problem is the people that are upstairs don't know what targeting is. I'm a football coach. I've been doing it for 30 years. I know when somebody's trying to hurt somebody. And maybe it has to come back down and put it in the hands of the coach. It says, listen, I want to challenge that. That guy right there was trying to hurt somebody.
Very interesting comments last night. That's from the Brian Kelly radio show on WSBT Radio last night. Jack Nolan, the host, Brian Kelly, his thoughts on the Wimbush hit against Michigan State and just overall the frustration across college football with the way targeting is being dealt with. First off, Eric, I thought that was some great work by Michael Burch and whoever else came up with the stat. I didn't realize since 2013, Notre Dame has had 7 ejections for targeting, only 1 by the opponent.
Yeah,
surprising.
I would have thought it was certainly in Notre Dame's column more check marks, but I didn't realize it was that different. And I can remember them being game-changing in some. Stephon Tuitt at Pittsburgh in 2013 was a complete game-changer. Notre Dame's defensive line was really banged up, and to lose a guy of that caliber, let alone the numbers problem, was huge. And I'm not saying that all those weren't warranted. I think Niles Morgan had one when he was a freshman that was certainly textbook targeting, and you could argue Nico Fertitta's last year against mm-hmm. USC
yep.
also rose to that level. And it's like fouls, you know, in every game, the score's not even, the rebounds aren't even, fouls aren't always going to be even. But 7-1 is a big discrepancy, and certainly when we can pick out instances where this was textbook targeting. I think there was a hit in the Virginia Tech game that rose to that level on DeShone Kizer. That just comes off the top of my head. You think of the Torrey Hunter hit in Texas. You think of the Wimbush hit in Michigan State. And you scratch your head and you say, okay, why is this so difficult to get right? And I don't know that I buy into that these officials are doing this on purpose because Notre Dame's an independent. I think the problem with being an independent is there's less recourse mm-hmm. to remedy it.
I know we have a similar issue in college hockey. If there is a game that is non-conference, there isn't a governing body to take a look at a hit and assign punishment. Now, if it's within a conference game, you have people to take care of that, but we have had hits against Notre Dame players in non-conference games that nothing happens because no one from the other conference is going to take charge in that situation and deliver punishment against a team from their conference. Eric, I mentioned this earlier in the week. I think it's ridiculous that I have to think of this, but with the way targeting is being mishandled on the field and in replay, to me, you have a replay booth with one individual in charge of regular football plays. Foot inbounds. Was it a touchdown? Was it a turnover? And then you have a second replay official. Their only job is to look at the tackles and look for targeting. I think it's ridiculous we have to go down that route, but it's something to think about because it sure seems like that there is so much to look at in a play that one person or a couple of individuals gathered around a monitor aren't able to get the job done because we are seeing too many instances where things are being missed.
Yeah, and if you want to put player safety as your number one priority, which is what college football is portending to be at this point, then you need to give additional resources, do whatever you need to do to start being consistent and getting this right.
And if you're really serious about player safety and you don't mind the games lasting longer, and I don't mind if the games last longer if you take care of the kids, but give a challenge flag to the college coaches like we see in the National Football League. But that flag is not for challenging plays. It's to take a look at hits like that. And if that has to stop the action and we take 5 more minutes of someone's time watching the game, so be it. But it's about protecting these players because in a lot of cases, they're not being protected.
Amen.
And then last night, the National Football League, you can't tell me they're worried about player safety. I'm sure most people have seen the hit by now between the Packers and the Bears as Bears linebacker Danny Trevathan absolutely crushed Devontae Adams, the Packer wide receiver, who was locked up by Bears defenders. He wasn't going anywhere, and Trevathan, full steam, lowered his head into the helmet of Adams. The force of the hit sent his mouthpiece flying through the air, and he went down in a heap. It looked very, very serious as the Packer players immediately motioned to their sideline. Good news is he's doing great. He's tweeted today that everything's fine. But, Eric, if you're serious about player safety in the NFL, Danny Trevathan is ejected from that game from that hit. Now, his resume, he has never had this type of hit take place in a game. And I think that's important that he's not a repeat offender. This was a first time, but the force of that hit, crown of the helmet to the side of the helmet, that should be ejection on the spot. So if you want to talk about the college game, if the NFL is serious about player safety, how can you make an argument Trevathan stayed in that game? It makes absolutely zero sense. 23 minutes after 5 o'clock, Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. You can hear a complete replay of the Brian Kelly radio show, including that segment on targeting, coming up tomorrow at noon during our pregame coverage of Notre Dame and Miami. Coming up next, our advantage game will break down the matchup between the Irish and the Redhawks, and we'll hand out some check marks. Eric and Darren with you, Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Ed, thank you very much. 528 at WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett, WSBT Sports Director. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I want to thank one of our listeners who phoned in. I have copy for the game day show that was given to me listing the guests for Evan Sharpley's show, and it listed Ara Parseghian's daughter Cindy being on the show. I'm told it's his daughter-in-law, so I apologize. Kind of like Joe Buck at the U.S. Open, you just kind of read what's given to you and you hope it's correct. So thank you for the correction to whoever who phoned in just a couple of moments ago. Happy to make that correction. It is time for the advantage game as we break down Notre Dame and Miami, Ohio. The Fighting Irish are 3-1, winners of 2 in a row, both on the road. Notre Dame 1-1 at home this year. Miami, Ohio is a 2-2 football team. Probably should be 3-1. They let the game against Cincinnati.
4-0. This game against Cincinnati got away from them at the end, and then Marshall, they gave up a pick six and 2 kickoff returns for touchdowns in a 5-point game.
A lot of ifs, ands, and buts.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, they are 2-2, but could be a heck of a lot better. So we're going to take a look at this game from 6 different angles, and let's start off by talking about Chuck Martin's run game. Miami, 93rd in the nation in rushing the football at 129 yards per game. It never fails. Notre Dame's nearly in the same spot in rush defense every year.
Well,
little different story this year. It's early on.
It's early on, and you have played some good running backs.
Absolutely.
to this point, and they're also, Notre Dame is running a lot more plays on defense. They're on the field more, so, but they're actually average per carry is lower than last year slightly.
I was just kind of referencing, they're always just kind of in that same spot, well, no matter the circumstance.
And, you know, I mean, but that number's,
it's
no
coming
matter
down.
How many plays you run, it's got to get better. You know, this is certainly an area of improvement, and this is a game where it needs to start because Notre Dame really has the advantage here. Miami isn't a very good running team. It's one of the reasons that I think Gus Raglan, their quarterback's numbers are down from last year, is just because so much is on his shoulders with a running game that just hasn't gotten going against, you know, not scorching defenses here that they've played against. So I'm definitely giving Notre Dame the check mark on the running game.
And to finish up the thought, Notre Dame 73rd in the country in run defense, 151.5 yards per game. But as Eric mentioned, a lot of positives built in to that number right now. You mentioned Raglan. He completed over 60% of his passes this year. That number well down this year. Pass efficiency offense, Miami, 63rd in the country. Notre Dame's pass efficiency defense is 52. It sure seems like if Miami is going to have a chance to be competitive slash have a chance to win the game in the second half, a lot is going to rely on the arm of Raglan.
Well, I think if you put Gus Raglan on these other teams that Notre Dame has played, it would have improved most of their performances. I think, you know, he went his entire career up until the Mississippi State bowl game last year without an interception. He's thrown three in his career, but they've all three been big ones. Two pick sixes this year and the big one in the bowl game, but he has been outstanding. He went to the same high school that Andrew Hendricks did, Cincinnati Moeller. And he was a redshirting freshman when Andrew had transferred from Notre Dame to Miami and was their starter. But I like him a lot. I think this is a nice test for Notre Dame's pass defense. But again, I think their lack of running game is going to hurt him in the passing game, and Notre Dame's going to be able to cheat a little bit. And I'm going to give Notre Dame the check mark here.
All right, so the Irish defense pick up early check marks in our advantage game. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips. It is 5:33 on this Friday evening. Mishawaka Cayman football presented by Midland Engineering coming up at 6:45. Now to the Fighting Irish offense. Let's begin with the run game. Interesting listening to the Brian Kelly radio show last night. Jack Nolan mentioned the Irish are seventh in the NCAA in rushing yards at 293 yards per game, and it was like they were giving away free ice cream. There was a huge roar in the background. Irish fans love that running game, and right now it's one of the best in the country. Eric, Miami tied for 38th, giving up 118 yards per game.
Yeah, they've done a really nice job with their run defense. They haven't faced anything like Notre Dame's running game. Now, we know that Dexter Williams is going to be a game-time decision, and Dexter's averaging over 10 yards a carry. He's Notre Dame's second-leading rusher among its running backs. My sense is he's not going to play. Why would you push him if he's even kind of close? And so it'll be Josh Adams, Tony Jones Jr., both of whom are supposed to be 100%, and then Deion McIntosh. I think Miami's run defense is good, but they haven't seen anything like Notre Dame. Irish get the check mark here.
Anything surprise you about watching McIntosh against Michigan State? Not a guy we've talked a lot about. We didn't think we'd have to get down that far on the depth chart.
Yeah, the thing about him is he came in as a running back. They moved him to wide receiver, and then when C.J. Holmes went down with an injury in the spring, he was back at running back. So you kind of thought of him kind of like an afterthought. Well, he doesn't look like he's just, you know, that he spent time with wide receiver. He looks like, hey, this is where I belong. And he looks like somebody that certainly can help him. He's got a nice little burst. I know his brother is quite the prospect, and Notre Dame's looking at him.
Irish 3-for-3 in check marks through three categories in our advantage game. Now to win, the Fighting Irish throw the football. Pass efficiency offense, despite the good showing against Michigan State, the Irish still 116th in the FBS. Miami's pass efficiency defense is 63rd, but have they faced some decent quarterbacks that this year that have tested them, like possibly Wimbush and the Irish could tomorrow?
Well, I think that Miami's overall defense is pretty good. I mean, they're 25th in the country in total defense, which is the best mark Notre Dame will see the rest of the season. And actually, in pass efficiency defense, they're 25th.
I must have got that wrong. I apologize.
It was team pass efficiency. They're 63rd.
Okay.
Yeah, so they put those things in type that's about this small right next to each other. But they've done a pretty good job. Again, I think Notre Dame is going to throw at them elements that they haven't seen before. They're going to see the best dual-threat quarterback they're going to see all year, and that's going to open up some things in the passing game. And I think, again, the big receivers, Equanimeous St. Brown, Chase Claypool, matched with Cam Smith. We might even see a little Kevin Stefferson later in the game. I think that's going to be difficult. I'm going to give Notre Dame a slight check mark here. I think Miami will be really good in terms of their fundamentals, but they do not rush the passer well, and I think that's going to be a problem, giving Brandon Wimbush all that time to throw.
Another check mark for the Fighting Irish this time when they throw the football. And now we move along to special teams.
You know, they both have some warts here. Miami is one of the worst teams in the country in kickoff returns. In fact, they're one from the bottom. And that hurt them in the Cincinnati game. They were so close to the goal line. They decided up three with about a minute and a half left. They decided to throw on third down. Cincinnati had a pick six and won the game on that play. Their kicker's pretty good. Sam Sloman, 5 of 6. He's got good range. You look at the numbers elsewhere, net punting is pretty comparable. Kick coverage, they're both kind of lousy at it. I'm going to give Notre Dame the slight check mark here, although maybe I should give Miami. But that kickoff return area is really kind of the tiebreaker for me.
Last but not least, in our advantage game, intangibles.
Well, I think Miami can come into this game really loose and say, you know what, we've got nothing to lose here. We're 21-point underdogs. And if we can keep it close in the first half, Notre Dame might start to tighten up a little bit. And I think that's probably what's going to happen in this game. But Notre Dame, you know, I was talking to Chase Claypool the other night, and you talked to Sean Crawford, and these guys so much appreciate the opportunity to kind of put last year behind them and the opportunities they're getting. And I just don't think they're in the mindset of, uh-oh, here we go again. I think their mindset's totally different. So, gosh darn it, I'm going to give Notre Dame another check mark here.
All right, so a clean sweep for the Irish in our advantage game. All 6 check marks go to the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame right around a 3-touchdown favorite in this matchup against Miami, Ohio. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. 5:38 is our time. Kickoff tomorrow, 5:17, so less than 24 hours away from the Irish and Miami, Ohio at Notre Dame Stadium. Chuck Martin, former Fighting Irish assistant coach on Brian Kelly's staff. It's his 4th year as the head coach of Miami, Ohio, and earlier this week he met the media in Oxford and talked about facing his former employer, the University of Notre Dame.
When we talked about scheduling this game, which I was a big part of, the biggest thing for me this week is I wanted Miami football to experience Notre Dame. And that was the goal. 4 years later, for me, not super enjoyable. You know, I got really, really good friends on the other sideline. That's not something that, you know, you really enjoy coaching against people that you really care about. So for me, I'd say it's a lot less about me this week and more about Miami football getting to go to Notre Dame. We're going to try to really soak in the Notre Dame experience. You got two different things. You got a chance to play at one of the most historic venues, and in my opinion, the most historic venue in the history of college football. And if you're a college football fan or just a sports fan in general, a lot of people never have been there. obviously for our players to have an opportunity to play in Notre Dame Stadium against the University of Notre Dame, that's obviously more than a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because if you really look at Notre Dame's schedule, they don't play that many different teams. All right, they kind of play the usual suspects. Yeah, they don't play the same 12 every year, but they don't get outside their 20 very often. So to be a team to have an opportunity to experience game weekend, game day at Notre Dame for our kids, for our whole university, for our fans, for everybody, to me, it's going to be something that is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many people. Then the second piece is obviously the game, and then going to play our best football and really trying to improve on some of the things that we did last week on both sides of the ball in ST. So amongst all the hoopla and being at Notre Dame and being a little bit awestruck, because it's going to be obviously a much different venue than our kids are used to, we got to get past that, and then we got to focus on playing a football game on Saturday and trying to play our very best football and trying to improve.
So for Chuck Martin, the head coach of Miami, what does he feel like the biggest challenge will be taking on the Fighting Irish?
Physical. You know, their kids, you know, that they recruit, never looked at or heard of Miami University. Our kids that we recruit weren't talking to Notre Dame. So, like I said, it's like going to recess and they got the first 85 picks. If you went to recess and you split the teams and one team got the first 85 picks, probably wouldn't be much of a fair fight. So that's really how it is. And I worry, like, people that don't understand that have no idea what's going on. They have delusional beliefs of what can happen now. Can upsets happen? Yes, upsets happen every week on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It happens all the time. And are we going to go there and play? But the biggest challenge is when you look at, and there's still a number of guys in the roster that I was a part of recruiting, all right, and their physical size, strength, speed is going to be overwhelming at times, and that'll be by far the biggest challenge.
He'd be a good salesman.
I liked him a lot when he was at Notre Dame. I thought he was good for Notre Dame. And I think he's good for Miami, Ohio.
I want to play one more soundbite. This was from the captain session on Wednesday. I don't know if it was this week or leading into the Michigan State game. We had a conversation about how well we thought the wide receivers were blocking this year and enhancing the run game. So I asked starting left tackle Mike McGlinchey, when you watch film of the run game, not only watching you, have you noticed how well the wide receivers have helped out the running game? And here is what the Irish starting left tackle Mike McGlinchey had to say.
I actually said that to Q this past week when we were watching film. I think that's one of our greatest improvements on offense this year is just noticing how our receivers and how our perimeter players are working and just busting their butt off to get down and stay on people and spring the big plays. I think that we hadn't seen that before, and at least to the extent of what we're doing right now in the 4 years that I've been here. And that's a credit to Coach Alexander, Coach, and all the receivers, and Coach Long, and having the mindset that they have right now in terms of doing whatever they can, whether it's the ball in their hands or whether it's blocking downfield to get to put points on the board. And our receivers have done a phenomenal job, and you just can repeatedly look on film and you see them body on body down the field and help spring huge plays. And I think that one run by Dexter later in the either the second quarter or the third quarter, when he wasn't touched for 15 yards until he got into the end zone because of guys being body on body downfield.
Well, the Irish missed the blocking of Chris Brown after he moved on. But right now, the wide receivers doing a really good job helping out the offensive line, the tight ends, and, of course, the running backs. And right now, the number 7 rushing attack of the country at 293 yards per game. And, by the way, should we mention that I would say, 98% of the time they're not using a fullback to do that?
That's true. They are 98% of the time they're not using a fullback. Thank you, Darren, for poking the bear.
I'm just reminding. Hey, I like a fullback, but I'm just reminding that you don't necessarily have to have a fullback if some other things take place. Now, inside the 10, we're seeing a little tight end play fullback or in short yardage situations, but I'm just saying, not bad. Just pointing out facts. I'm not poking the bear. I'm just pointing out facts.
I'll point out one fact that I forgot to do during the advantage game. Tony Reed, a starting safety for Miami, is going to miss the first half of the game because he had a targeting call in the Central Michigan game last weekend.
Very good. We'll keep that in mind. It is now 5:45. We'll pick some games coming up next as Sports Beat continues, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on 96.1 FM, WSBT. 5:49 at WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett with Eric Hansen from our WSBT studios. Sean Stiers joins us from South Bend St. Joe High School, where he will call Mishawaka Caveman Football, presented by Midland Engineering tonight. Pregame coverage at 6:45, opening kickoff 7 o'clock. The St. Joe Indians and the Mishawaka Caveman. That should be a very entertaining football game. It's time for our pick'em game. Sean went 4-1 last week. Eric and I went 3-2. Sean is 18-4, Eric 17-5, and I'm 16-6, and we have some tough games to pick this week. We begin, Sean, in the Pacific 12 Conference, a game that will take place tonight. Number 5, USC, at number 16, Washington State. Who do you like?
You know, I'm not particularly confident in this one, but Sam Darnold has 7 interceptions already. The Cougar defense has 15 sacks and 5 interceptions in their 4-0 start. So I'm going to go with Washington State because Luke Falk, their quarterback, doesn't turn it over much.
Okay. I've been on that fence all day. Eric, which side of the fence are you on?
I wanted so badly to pick Washington State in this game, but I don't like the way how imbalanced their offense is, and I think that's going to catch up to them against USC. And I think USC is better than what they've shown to this point.
That's what I'm thinking.
So I am going to go with the Trojans and then rue that when Sean is right next week.
They're a 5.5-point favorite on the road, and I want to take Washington State, but I just feel like USC, this might be the week they put it all together, so I'm going to go with the men of Troy. Another game that will take place tonight, also of interest to Irish fans, a future opponent, the number 14 Miami of Florida Hurricanes at the Duke Blue Devils, who have been sneaky good so far this year. Sean, your choice, Hurricanes or Blue Devils?
By the way, I'm still not completely sold on Ole Wazoo, but those turnovers are what swayed me. So this particular game, I'm going to go with Miami. Defensive back Malik Young, I told reporters yesterday, their goal is to knock Duke quarterback Daniel Jones out of the game. So it'll probably be Young who ends up getting leveled tonight. But I'm going to go with Miami, though, in what'll just be their third game of the season.
They must have learned that from Michigan State. Eric, go ahead.
You know, Miami has some rust not having played very much because of Hurricane Irma. They've given up a ton of passing yards. To Bethune-Cookman and Toledo. And Duke's defense is pretty good. I also think that I've heard that they've been working on their 8 lateral play for the end of the game to do it legally.
Wow.
So I am taking the Blue Devils in the upset in Durham.
All right. I'm going to go the safe route. I'm going to take Miami. But Duke's been pretty good so far this year. But I'm just going to say Miami, another week of practice, will look a little better this week. That defense has got to be better with the talent they have on that side of the football. Now to the SEC. Number 24, Mississippi State, who let Eric and I down last Saturday by laying a huge egg between the hedges. Now they go to number 13, Auburn. Sean.
Oh, man. This is another. I've been sitting here, and I go back and forth, and I looked at Vegas. I looked all over the place on this one. I'm talking myself again into going with Auburn because they're an 8-point favorite at home, so I'm going to go with Auburn.
Eric?
My logic is pretty similar. I want to pick Mississippi State, but it being at Auburn, I just felt like Mississippi State burned me last week, so I'm going with Auburn.
That's right. I'm mad at Mississippi State, so I am dumping them on the side of the road.
That's
and
right.
I'm going with War Eagles, Auburn Tigers.
I was going to count to 3 and see if we could all say who we were picking at the same time. I'm glad we all went with Auburn.
I've got mine circled on a piece of paper,
too.
I'm not changing.
All right, now an interesting ACC matchup, Sean. Number 2, Clemson, after a shaky 3 quarters against BC last week. They're at number 12, Virginia Tech.
Yeah, the Hokies are off to the hot 4-0 start, but Clemson's defense has just been so good to start things off, and they're running the ball well, too, so I'm going to go with the defending champs still.
Virginia Tech's defense is actually pretty good, but two of the games were against Delaware and Old Dominion, and a third is East Carolina. The one game where they played a decent team, West Virginia, that was a high-scoring game. So I am going to go with Clemson on the road in a close one.
I'm going to take Clemson as well. Love their defense. When in doubt, go with the better defensive team. We will make our score predictions for Miami, Notre Dame tomorrow, right around 3:55 here on WSBT Radio. But for now, give me two words, either Miami, Ohio, or Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
I will go with Notre Dame of Indiana.
Thank you, Eric. It'll be a clean sweep in that category. We're all going to take the Fighting Irish. Sean, thank you. I'll talk to you in a couple of moments. 5:55 at WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
We have our special game day section looking at the Miami-Notre Dame game. I did a feature on Chase Claypool. Mike Varell with a column on the Notre Dame defense. Lots of high school football action, including Mishawaka at St. Joseph. We have lots of Big Ten football previews and much, much more.
Eric, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Game Day Sports Beat from 2 to 4. Right now, a CBS Sports Update on WSBT.
Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left! Notre Dame leads!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Styers.
A lot to get to before we turn things over to Sean. At South Bend St. Joe High School for Mishawaka-Cateman football presented by Midland Engineering. The pregame begins at 6:45. You'll hear from Drew Tranquil coming up and a couple of projections for tomorrow's Notre Dame-Miami game. Then right around 6:23, Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn Golf Club and the brand new The Blarney Hole by Blackthorn, located in Tuscana Park, which is open today. He's going to join us. And then that'll be followed by WNDU sports director Angelo DiCarlo, his weekly visit to talk Irish football and to tell you where you're going to find all their programming this weekend with the President's Cup on NBC Notre Dame football on the NBC Sports Network. Plus, their pregame show is on a different channel. So we'll explain all that coming up in just a couple of moments here on 96.1 FM. WSBT, Sean and Darren with you. We begin by hearing from Notre Dame Rover Drew Tranquil. This football team is creating turnovers. In fact, they have created 9 turnovers so far this year. Only 14 all of last year. Here's the Irish Rover on that statistic.
I'd say the reasons are because we practice it. I think it's a big emphasis. It's always been an emphasis of Coach Elko since I've stepped into his system. That's one of the three things we try to do and measure ourselves by on a game-to-game basis. And so we'll continue to work on that and continue to push that, because especially when you can cause turnovers on the road and even at home, it gives yourself a big advantage.
On the road last Saturday, 3 turnovers created turned into 21 points and a 38-18 win at Michigan State. So a little more pressure on the quarterback. They're creating turnovers. Sean, that's 2 areas of improvement for this football team. What do you think the next big improvement might be for the defense?
Well, I would think it's just overall sacks. They have 8 right now, which is still pretty respectable compared to the 14 they had all of last season. And a lot of it depends on the kind of teams you're playing and all that. And I think some of that factored in, especially early last year. But they're getting more pressure. They're disrupting the line more. And now it's a matter of getting to the quarterback and finishing him off more. It seems like that would be the next progression, is just a few more sacks per game.
Well, the team has also picked up the ability to avoid the big play by the opposition, and Drew Tranquil discussed that fact earlier this week.
I think it's, like I said earlier, guys buying into their job. I think it's our corner and our secondary staying on top of the routes and making the quarterback check down. You know, we've allowed teams, you know, we gave up, I think, more yards than we wanted to, more yards than I'd like to in this past game. But when you force offenses in college football to drive the length of the field, they can't do it on a drive-to-drive basis, and they can't score as many points. When you start giving up explosive plays and offenses get 40, 50-yard passes, it makes it a lot easier to get down in the red zone and be productive scoring points.
I'm going to throw in another fact. I just feel like they're such a better tackling team. You're probably taking care of two or three more big plays off the board just because of the fact they're doing so much better job bringing down the tack or the ball carrier in the first opportunity. Now, Sean, Gus Raglin is the quarterback for Miami. Completed over 60% of his passes last year. It appears his supporting cast not as strong this year, completing 52% of his passes through four games. Do you feel like Raglin could put some pressure on the Irish defense?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I really don't think he can. I think his best shot, and I know he'll kind of like to try to play a little pitch and catch maybe and move the ball downfield with some short stuff like that, but they want to take some shots down the field, and just based on some of the stuff we've talked about, I don't see that being there, especially considering the pressure that Notre Dame should be able to get on him. I think for him to have success, he's going to have to be really proficient with a lot of short passes, take what he can get. We've talked about it, grind it out, and kind of move it downfield methodically. But I really don't know that that's going to be feasible for them tomorrow.
Raglin's been sacked 11 times through four games. That total could go up tomorrow against the Fighting Irish defense.
Yep.
Yeah. And also, Drew Tranquil met the media on Wednesday. I asked him about the play of the defensive line and also the play of one of the guys in the middle of the defensive line, Jerry Tillery.
Oh, I mean, it's great. Whenever they can make guys get off double teams, whenever they can get the penetration they are, it makes us easy to fit our gaps. It makes our run pass reads a lot easier. Whenever they can stop the running back deep in the backfield, it allows us to pursue the football more quickly and get those tackles.
Jerry Tillery's getting his share of tackles right now, but interior defensive linemen, sometimes things they do not show up in the stats. How is he graded out so far this year when you watch him on tape?
I think Jerry's been great for us. I think specifically this year, what stood out to me about him is his effort and pursuit to the football. He's made multiple tackles downfield, which is impressive for a 310-pound lineman. And so to see him doing that and giving that spark to our team has really been incredible.
Sean, guys like Tillery and also Andrew Trombetti, who Brian Kelly praised during fall camp that he's figured it out. Those two have really improved their game, and that's also factors in why this defense has gotten better.
Yeah, this is obviously an important year for Tillery. We talked about it with him being at the nose and with the lack of depth there at the nose. It was really experience depth anyway, because they've been able to rotate some guys in. But this is a big year for him just to prove that he could stay assignment sound first of all, and then hold the point of contact, be disruptive in the middle, and he's done all of that. He's underperformed before. We've seen some of his antics and stuff like that. Thought there was once or twice that you might see it last week, but last week being Michigan State, I think it was chippy anyway. But I mean, Trombetti too, not that he necessarily underperformed of his own volition, but I think the combination of having the new scheme, the new position coach, and the new conditioning has just helped not only those two guys, but the line as a whole as well this year.
Sean Stiers at South Bend St. Joe. I'm Darren Pritchett in our WSBT studios, looking ahead to Notre Dame Miami tomorrow at 5:17 on WSBT Radio. And now, projections. Here we go again, trying to figure out what's going to happen. I thought the Irish would rush for 200 yards last week against Michigan State. Should have said more than that. Let's try again this week with Brandon Wimbush, the Irish quarterback. Sean, your projections for his running and passing numbers.
Well, really, it's going to be interesting, I think, to see if they come out throwing again like last week when he opened with five straight pass plays against Michigan State. Mm-hmm. So here's a tendency for you, though, that I found kind of on that thought when I was thinking about that earlier today. He's opened all four games this season with a pass so far. He's 3 of 4 on those passes for 45 yards, the only incompletion, the first play against Georgia. Now, I don't think that decided the whole game, obviously, but an interesting little trend. They've opened every game so far with a pass. But I think he'll go 17 for 22, 188 yards, two touchdown passes, and then 11 carries for 122 and two scores on the ground.
We're in the same ballpark. I got him 15 for 21, throwing the football for 210 and a couple of touchdowns. And I'm going to figure the rushing attempts will be held back a little bit, but he's going to spring a big one. Eight carries for 109 and a touchdown. Good. Now to the Notre Dame running backs, or at least the main two we expect to see in this game, with Dexter Williams, a game-time decision with an ankle injury. How about the rushing totals for Josh Adams and Tony Jones Jr.?
See, and again, it's like a lot of this is going to factor on the score of the game and kind of how things go, especially early on because of those. Jones has had the ankle tweak as well, but I've got Adams 15 carries, 110 yards and a touchdown. Jones 12 carries, 85 yards and a score.
You're not going to believe how close we are.
Really?
I've got Adams 14 for 111 and a touchdown.
Man.
And Jones 12 carries for 64 yards for the Irish.
Man.
So we're in the same ballpark with those two guys. How about the leading pass catcher for the Irish against the Red Hawks?
I've got Equanimeous St. Brown, six catches for 116 yards and a score.
Okay, I've got seven catches for Equanimeous, 100 receiving yards and a touchdown. And finally, how about a leading tackler for the Fighting Irish against Miami?
I've got St. Joe baseball coach John Gump harassing me right now.
I hear him.
So I think he's ready to throw me out the front window of this press box here. So I've got to watch myself. I'm going to go Tavon Coney with nine, though.
Wow, he wins a state championship. Now he's in charge of the press box. Is that how it works?
I see a ring on his finger. I don't know if that's the ring or what that is. So,
all right. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say Drew Tranquil with 10 tackles. He'll lead the Irish in that category. While we have you, I got about 90 seconds. A quick thought on Mishawaka and South Bend St. Joe. Is my thought process right? This could be a high-scoring game?
I would have to think so. The one thing that's given Mishawaka some problems this year is throwing the ball. Ashton Ruskowski, I mean, he's not throwing it all over the place, but he has over 500 yards, a couple touchdowns. They run the ball fairly well, too. So I would expect that we're going to see some points on the board tonight.
Mishawaka, South Bend St. Joe, pregame at 6:45, opening kickoff at 7 o'clock. Mishawaka Caveman Football presented by Midland Engineering. I'll let you enjoy a little dinner and relaxation, and we'll hear from you in about 30 minutes or so.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Darren.
All right, that's Sean Steyers at South Bend St. Joe High School. Hopefully you caught Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley at noon today as they broke down the Notre Dame-Miami game. Some really good stuff on that show earlier today. Coming up next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, we're going to leave Notre Dame football conversation for a moment because we want to bring Tim Firestone on the program, the owner of Blackthorn Golf Club, one of my co-hosts for the golf show. A brand new venture opened today. We want to tell you about it. It's in Tuscana Park, and the Blarney Hole at Blackthorn, by Blackthorn, I should say, is open for business. We'll tell you all about it coming up. Angelo DiCarlo, WNDU Sports Director, his thoughts on the Irish football team a segment away. It is 6:18 at 96.1 FM, WSBT. 6:24 at Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on this Friday evening. One of my co-hosts on the golf show is Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn Golf Club. And today, a brand new venture debuted. It's called the Blarney Hole by Blackthorn, located in Tuscana Park in Granger. And Tim joins us here on WSBT Radio. Tim, good to catch up with you. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Darren?
I am terrific. Good to talk to you, as always. And I would say this new business venture is very unique because you have an opportunity to, I think, entertain golfers not only during the year at Blackthorn Golf Club, but year-round at the Blarney Hole by Blackthorn. Why are you anticipating this is going to be a huge success? Because I really love what you have inside that building.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. So the previous owner did an incredible job of building the facility out. It's really a neat and unique venue. I think for us, you know, the ability to have our employees now year-round, where we have the ability to stay in contact and in front of our customers all year-round, just really helps expand that Blackthorn brand here in the Granger, and we couldn't be more excited about this opportunity and, you know, providing kind of an amenity to the community here for something to do in the winter months, but then also, you know, in the summer with private corporate events and different things that are going on. So, looking forward to this venture and really kind of expanding that Blackthorn brand.
Tim, there are 9 simulators on 2 different levels. Give our listeners an idea of some of the things that you can do on these golf simulators.
Yeah, so the simulators are really fun. There is all kinds of different things you can do. You can play on over 50 different golf courses from around the country. You can practice. For me, Darren, the coolest thing has been of being able to track your practice sessions and seeing your ball flight and, you know, whether you're hitting it high or hitting it low or hooking it or fading it. You can track all that data. You can do fun contests, closest to the pin or long drive contests. We've had a lot of fun with that with the staff. Sure, to hit the furthest into the net. So it's a lot of fun. So you don't have to be a golf expert by any means. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, even if you're a novice, to come in and have some fun with it.
Tim Firestone, our guest, talking about the brand new The Blarney Hole by Blackthorn at Toscana Park, and it's open for business right now. In terms of food and drink, you have a lot of options.
Yeah, full menu, a lot of a great beer and wine list as well. So we're going to take the Blackthorn menu that we have at the golf course to kind of bring it here and then expand that with extra appetizers and some other features as well. So it's a really cool place to come and grab a sandwich. Every menu item that we have is under $10. And then we've got over 40 beers and wines to choose from. So nice place to come grab a cold one. Over 15 TVs in the building. We have the direct NFL ticket on the direct TV. So nice. For the football lovers on the weekends can come by. And I'm looking forward to even watching some football tonight here and hanging out.
That's right. We were watching the President's Cup at your facility earlier today. The Americans up 8-2 dominating the Internationals right now. Tim, I know you always spend a lot of time promoting the Blackthorn card at Blackthorn Golf Club. You promote it on our airwaves. How will this new venture affect members of that Blackthorn Black Card, and will there be some rewards for them?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up. So, obviously, you know, the Blackthorn card has been a great addition for us when we launched that 2012. And we continue to try to expand the benefits that you get with that card, and obviously this is going to be a way to do that. So every rental fee on the simulator, there'll be at least a $5 per hour discount per player. Then we've also have 10% off your entire food and beverage order as well for Blackthorn Harvest, and we'll do different specials and things as well. So absolutely, there'll be benefits here at the Blarney Hall for all those people that have a Blackthorn card.
In terms of your location and your hours, pass along when folks can check out the Blarney Hole by Blackthorn.
Yeah, so theblarneyhole.com is the website. You can check out for all the hours, and every day is a little bit different there, but basically like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. We'll be open a little bit later on the weekends. And then Toscana Park, you know, it's kind of a booming area back here. We're in the corner back behind Bill and McCree, but plenty of parking and really kind of a cool spot, and really looking forward to see how this unfolds.
Awesome. Hey, Tim, congratulations. Look forward to spending time at the Blarney Hole by Blackthorn in Toscana Park. And again, folks, check out the President's Cup this weekend. Or, hey, everybody loves NFL football. The Sunday ticket will be available there. So not only can you hit a few golf balls, but you can enjoy some viewing and a nice cold beverage. You can't beat a weekend like that.
That sounds great.
Timmy, good to talk to you, my man. Greatly appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Have a great night. Thanks, Darren. Appreciate
you too.
It.
That's Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn. And check out his brand new facility, the Blarney Hole by Blackthorn, Toscana Park in Granger. The 9 simulators. You can have a lot of fun. Check it out. It is 6:29 when we come back. WNDU Sports Director Angelo DiCarlo will join me to talk Fighting Irish football. Mishawaka Cayman football presented by Midland Engineering is coming up in about 15 minutes on WSBT. .632 at WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on WSBT Radio. It's time to catch up with WNDU Sports Director Angelo DiCarlo as we talk Notre Dame football on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Well, we've got Notre Dame taking on Miami, Ohio at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday. And as we bring in Ange, let's get this out of the way. I know you have spent time on this in every newscast on WNDU this week, but the game is not on WNDU, and you have nothing to do with that.
Yes, that was actually single-handedly my decision. I'm waiting for the phones to be lighting up on Saturday to say, what's going on? Like, we didn't warn people. Yes, it was a decision made well before the season by NBC to move the game to NBC Sports Network, which I'm sure your listeners know, but many others don't necessarily know where that's located. But if you have Comcast, for example, it's on 174. So it won't be on WNDU. We're airing the President's Cup per NBC's decision. So that's where the game itself is going to be. Countdown to kickoff is going to be on 16.2, which is Antenna TV, which is also available on Comcast Channel 353. So if you're used to watching some old reruns of Different Strokes, you can also watch Countdown to Kickoff tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Are you going to dress like Mr. Drummond?
You know, I don't know. That's a tough one. Maybe Arnold. I'm not sure.
All right. So,
what folks, are you talking about, Darren?
That's exactly right. Well, it's out of your control. It's on NBC Sports Network, the home of Fighting Irish hockey. So hopefully people are familiar with that channel because of that particular fact. To last week,
very good point.
Notre Dame went up to Michigan State, beat the Spartans 38-18. Did you feel like that was one of the more complete football games they played in a couple of years?
I did not grab the mic to ask Brian Kelly a question after the game because I didn't know what to ask. I have no questions. They answered all my questions. Like, I had questions for players, but for Kelly, I was like, I'm not really sure what to ask him. They did everything I would want them to do in a game. They did in that game. Because I almost feel like if they would have blown Michigan State out 56-0, we would have been like, well, Michigan State's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I mean? So there was enough to show that Michigan State challenged them a bit, and then they overcame any of those challenges that were thrown their way. And we haven't seen that. I don't know when we've seen that from this team. But I think it goes all the way back to 2012 when you think of a season when they overcame, you know, it got close and they overcame it. Because, yeah, I guess we did it maybe a little bit in 2015, but those were games that shouldn't have been close most of the time. So I think it's been a long, long time since I saw an effort like that from the team. Maybe Michigan State is going to have another poor season, Darren, but for now, that's great momentum moving forward for this program.
And Mike Elko was a name that a lot of people were familiar with, one of those hot assistants when he was the defensive coordinator at Wake Forest. Now, I know I'm asking this question. Four games into the season, there are landmines ahead that's going to test this Fighting Irish defense. But just in the month of September, has Mike Elko exceeded all of your preseason expectations?
Yes, because I didn't think, regardless of how good he was, I didn't think the talent level was there on the defense from what we saw the last 2 years for the defense to perform at this level. Now, the jury was out on, okay, can he eventually get them to a point that the defense can be respectable? Sure. You know, everyone's saying good things. But I'm like, there's no way he's going to do it right away. I mean, there's not enough guys there. Well, apparently there is. And it shows you how bad of a job Ryan Van Gorder really did.
Yeah.
If the same guys, Elko can turn into, you know, turnover machines, And to limit the points down by just doing the basics and tackling. But your point of it's only four games in, let's remember how high we were on Brian Van Gorder after five games in his first season. So I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but we all thought Van Gorder was God after five games in his first year, and then the wheels came off the bus against, fittingly, North Carolina. So if you're an Irish fan, hopefully that's not the case next week, that all of a sudden the wheels come off the bus.
The shutout of Michigan seems a long, long time ago as we look back now. How about Sean Crawford, just with all the injuries and not starting this year, which I was a little surprised by. I assumed he'd come right back into a starting role, maybe the best corner on the football team. With all that being said, he has shown up the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it felt like even when he wasn't starting, when he got in the game, the first, you know, game or two, he wasn't all there. And then you're starting to go, is this one of those deals where the kid, poor kid, had a couple of injuries and he's just not the same player? You know, it's tough. He comes back from
knee injury and an Achilles injury, maybe he doesn't have that next extra step. And then, boom, he showed he definitely has that the last couple of weeks, the way he's played at BC and against Michigan State. Now, some of those turnovers against BC, the one interception was phenomenal that he created. The other one was kind of gifted to him. But the play against Michigan State,
yeah. That's
heads-up football, man. I mean, 99 times out of 100, that's a touchdown, and that's the one guy that decided, nope, this is the one thing I remember from practice that they showed me. I don't have a chance to tackle this guy, but maybe I have a chance to get this ball loose and save this touchdown. So I'm going to do that. And I think that's the one thing the players said this week that really impressed me is how much they emphasize how much turnovers are being emphasized in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously it's paying dividends that they do their turnover drill and everything because they're doing so well there with 9 turnovers forced already at 4 games in.
Angelo DiCarlo, sports director, WNDU, our guest. How many questions did Brandon Wimbush answer with his passing game against Michigan State?
I think he answered questions. I don't know if he answered a ton. It wasn't like he lit it up. I mean, the 14 to 20 is certainly more along the lines of, okay, he can pass the ball. And then you add in the running dimension, and then you're like, okay, this can be a complete quarterback for sure. So I think he answered a lot. But I do want to see that consistently. I want to see if, you know, the run game is struggling in certain instances, and everyone knows he's going to pass, is he going to be able to get the job done in that situation? I think the run game opened things up for him, certainly, against Michigan State, and I think he got some of that confidence back that he needed from the week before. I think he had a chip on his shoulder. I think he saw... He put out a tweet himself that people are kind of mean on social media last week. So he didn't see it either. So I think he had a chip on his shoulder, and that shows you how much of an ultimate competitor he is. And he honed that in the right way to motivate himself to get the job done correctly. So I think it was a big step forward for sure.
Do you feel like Miami will be a test tomorrow?
Well, I go back to the human nature aspect.
Yeah.
They can say all they want about avoiding a letdown. We're the same team week in and week out. The same stuff every football team at every level says of how you prepare each week. But I just have a hard time believing you can have that second level of intensity naturally inside you heading into this game after the way you performed last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were better off... I don't know if they would have been better off physically if USC was right now, but I think emotionally they would have been geared up for it and ready to go and focus. Miami, just like, I felt like there was an aura around the team, and I don't mean this to sound negative, but it can be. There was an aura around the team this week that it was like, yeah, that's what we've been telling you guys. This is what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it, so we can do this. And I just feel like, if they believe that a little bit when they're practicing, maybe they don't have that chip on their shoulder anymore, and then that can be a problem. With that said, as Chuck Martin, the Miami coach, pointed out, if we did a draft or we went to reset, Brian Kelly would have the first 85 picks, and then he would finally get to pick again at recess for his team. So, and I think that's true. I think the offense and defensive line should be able to dominate this game on the strength. But it's just that human nature aspect that worries me that if you let Miami believe for a little bit and you don't put them away, can that be an issue? I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Let's do a recap. President's Cup is on WNDU tomorrow. Countdown to Kickoff is on Antenna TV at what time?
At 4 p.m.
Okay. And then the Irish in Miami only on the NBC Sports Network at 5 o'clock. Did I pass the test?
You passed the test. Very good job. Also, you can watch it on the NBC Sports app or NBCSports.com. The key there is you still have to have a cable or satellite subscription. So if, you know, you're someone that's used to watching it on NBCSports.com because the game was always on WNDU, that was free because it was over the air. you still need the subscription to get it on the app or on NBCSports.com.
All right, so at 5 o'clock tomorrow, if you have any questions, I'll give Anja's cell phone number out. He'll be happy to give you all the information.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'll make sure I put my cell phone right next to you in the press box, and you can answer that.
Sounds good. Hey, we'll see you at the stadium tomorrow. Thanks for your time.
All right, Darren. Thank you.
Angelo DiCarlo, Sports Director, WNDU. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and buy Sport Clips. We thank you for joining us. Hope you'll join us from 2 to 4 tomorrow. Game Day Sports Beat here on WSBT.